Welcome to the Fab Intro Podcast and more. My name is Bill Russo, and I am your co-host today. This podcast originates in the city of New York, in the state of New York, in the United States of America. But it wasn't always like that. We are here in the United States of America because there was a revolution. There was the American Revolution. And the topic of this podcast will be the American Revolution. What we want to do is to advance you, our listeners. We want to advance your knowledge. We want to advance your appreciation of the past. We want you to have a better sense of your identity and how you fit in with others. Our experience, Anthony LoFaso and I, have taught us the importance of knowing our audience and working with our audience, and in fact, even connecting with our audience. We have met so many people, countless numbers of people, who even after a broadcast, when we have met them for the first time, we stay in touch with them, and they in turn stay in touch with you, with the audience, with us. And that's what we're all about. We're all about the listeners. If we can help advance the careers of the listeners, we can help advance their knowledge and where they fit in society, as I said earlier. That's what we intend to do. We're not here to be one big, long commercial or to preach or teach any particular ideology, but to share with you. And in turn, we'd love to hear from the people that listen to us, like you, and have your feedback so we can improve, we can bring new programming to you. And that's what we do. We're starting off a premiere broadcast about the American Revolution. Why the American Revolution? Because here we are broadcasting from America, and we identify with being Americans. We're here. And how does we get here? And how did it start? And what was the intention of the people who rebelled against the occupiers of this land? And why did it turn out the way it did? There's a lot of conflict going on in the world. There's a lot of peaceful nations that have been around a long, long time. But out of the conflict of the American Revolution, here we are today in a country that was formed by people who rebelled, who started a revolution for a principle as stated in Thomas Jefferson's words, all men are created equal. And that was a profound statement to make at the time. It didn't talk about the king. It didn't talk about a dictator, an emperor. It talked about all men were created equal. And by that, it was meant all human beings were created equal. The definition has kind of like expanded and evolved over the course of time. And our Constitution provides and our laws provide that all people are created equal. So I'm so glad to be here, be with this great group, with Anthony LoFaso, my co-host, and with Edward Paunetto, our sound engineer, and especially to be broadcasting to you. So, Anthony, we are ready to start, initiate, and fire the first volley, if you will, of the American Revolution. We will be talking about people, places, and the quest, the goal for freedom.
Well, thank you, Bill, and thank you for, I don't know if I can wear that expert moniker because I have met quite a few experts in the field. I know a little bit about it, and I enjoy it. It's a hobby. I've written about it, and that's a lot of fun. But there are people who know a great deal about it. And what I wanted to talk about today was, starting at the beginning of the real action here in New York City. Let's say go back to July of 1776, and the British have to leave Boston because the people in Boston and all around the Massachusetts colony and in New Hampshire and Vermont and in upstate New York, they're really for the revolution, almost 100%. And they're able to chase the British out of Boston. And so where are they going to go? They're going to come to New York City. And so General George Washington, newly appointed commander-in-chief of the Continental Army, now knows that he must go to New York City and somehow, some way, defend this city, which is almost undefendable because the British have one of the most powerful navies on earth, and the Americans have almost no navy at all. So here we are. But before I do that, I'm fortunate enough to have been introduced to a man who knows quite a bit about it and has worked for many years portraying George Washington in his different places. And I'm hoping that we can reach him on the telephone, Eddie, if you could bring Mike Grillo. Hello, Michael?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Mike. It's so good to hear you. This is Anthony LoFaso, and we're on the Fab Intro podcast with Bill Russo.
Welcome, Michael, to the Fab Intro podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. We're really privileged to have you and honored because we know that you have portrayed our founding father, George Washington, for many years and in many different locations. And I've just tried to set up a little scenario for our listeners in that we've chased the British out of Boston, but now they're coming to New York. And so George Washington is somewhere in Brooklyn trying to organize the American defense. And I'm sure you're familiar with all of that.
Oh, absolutely, especially the hardships that took place. The battle for New York basically started to begin as soon as the British warships arrived in New York Harbor when they entered Sandy Hook. You had upwards, by the time the end of August came, when the actual battle started on August 27th, the battle.
Michael, this is Bill Russo. Could you explain to the listeners, those who are not familiar with New York City and its geography, where is Sandy Hook?
Sandy Hook is the mouth opening of New York Harbor. It's basically near the area where New Jersey and New York meet. So when you're on the Atlantic Ocean, you enter the harbor, you enter through Sandy Hook. So that's basically where it's located. So you have a buildup of 350 British warships. One of the largest invasions you're going to see for a long time. You won't see anything like that till the invasion of Normandy in 1944. So from May, when the first warships were spotted, when you had the HMS Eagle, Lord Richard Howe's ship, arrive, you had a buildup of upwards of 20 to 25,000 British troops that arrived, and they basically made their base of encampment Staten Island. That was the base of their operation. And how am I,
Michael? Michael, you said Staten Island. We're on Staten Island because, well, a lot of our listeners are in the New York City area, and some were in the New York City and have gone to other parts of the country. A lot of people have heard of the borough of Staten Island.
Sure.
What did that consist of, and where was it on Staten Island?
I would say basically probably around the area where the foot of the Barrows Channel Bridge lies today. Right over there in that area, that's pretty much where they're offloading or their supplies or their ships. Now, I'm sure they also were occupying the village of Richmond Town at the time. It's Richmond County, and a lot of times the British referred to Staten Island as Richmond. And my job was to try to defend the city the best I could. About 4 to 5 fortifications are set up on the western part of Long Island, which today, of course, is Brooklyn. You have Fort Box, you have Fort Putnam, the oblong of Fort as well as fortifications in Manhattan. Manhattan, the highest mountain peak in Manhattan in the northern section, which we call Washington Heights, was referred to as Mount Washington, basically located around the area of 183rd, 184th Street, Fort Washington Avenue. There's a park there today called Bennett Park. That was the site of that fort that Colonel McGraw of the Continental Army started to build early June of 1776. There was occasional skirmishes with British warships going up the Hudson River around this time, leading up to the invasion at the end of August, firing cannons into New York City. There's a cannonball today that's still lodged and Samuel Francis's Tavern over on Pearl and Broad Street today. So a lot is going on, and my job through the Continental Congress is try to defend it the best I can.
And so now we know that, and I'm glad you made that point so that people could understand the scale of the operation, in that that armada of British warships is the most until D-Day,
correct,
1944. It's something that people don't comprehend, that the British were an enormous power with great resources. And so they land here in Staten Island and then later in Brooklyn at Gravesend and New Utrecht,
correct,
in the thousands, in the thousands, well-equipped, well-trained, and supervised by experienced officers who fought battles all over the world and know how to manipulate men and equipment. So how did you face all of that, General Washington? How were you able to deal with that?
Well, by the time the end of June came in July, we have on paper 13,000 Continental soldiers and militia. In reality, 9,000 are fit for duty. So we're outnumbered 2 to 3 to 1. So the odds pretty much was pretty much against us at the time when the Battle of Long Island began on the 27th of August, when they came ashore, attacking Gravesend, the village of New Utrecht. And after 2 days of heavy fighting, think about some of the rain that we've been having recently here today in New York City, the heavy rain in the middle of the night. It's raining. Muskets don't work. We lost upwards of 3,000 men at the Battle of Long Island, which most people today, of course, call the Battle of Brooklyn. 3,000 men captured or killed. So what I had to do on the 28th is I met in Red Hook at an inn. I believe it was the Red Lion Inn. And the discussion with the officers happened to have been, what do we do now? I want to save the remainder of the troops that I have here. I'm left now with 9,000 men. How do I get them?
Let me cut you off for 1 minute, yeah. Michael. It's also very interesting. So outnumbered 3 to 1, could you tell us, General Washington, come to understand that you and your officers had evaluated the situation and had come to the conclusion that with the resources at hand, you wouldn't be able to defend the city, but that the Continental Congress gave you a direct order to defend the city, even though it was against your counsel?
Oh, absolutely. I had my orders through John Hancock, the president of the Congress at the time, to hold the city as long as I could. But as I was mentioning, after 1 day of heavy fighting, 3,000 men are gone. I'm having a discussion at this tavern. It's pouring rain. Colonel Glover of Marblehead, Massachusetts, he's a fisherman. He knows how to handle ships. Every man and his regiment are pretty much the same. They're all sailors. He promised to evacuate every single soldier, and he kept his promise. Now, some people say it was divine providence what happened on the 29th, 2 days after the British landed on the 29th of August, that we were able, in the cloak of darkness, in fog, in a rainstorm, Glover was able to evacuate every single man. Now, I made sure I was one of the last men left to leave Long Island on that morning, the early hours just before the sunrise. And imagine this going on. You have the whole harbor choked up with British warships. They can't see you, but they could possibly hear the boats moving in the water, all those rowboats evacuating all the men. So Colonel Glover was able to get every piece of cloth or rag he could get, wrap it around the oars so they don't make much noise. So pretty much he's muffling those oars. And by some miracle, every single man was evacuated from Long Island.
He was an extraordinary man, and I know that he helped you later on in the Battle of Trenton getting across the ice.
Absolutely.
Without his assistance, it would have been. I understand that they were whalers out of Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Yes, they were. Absolutely. And Glover, basically in New York and, of course, in the banks of the Delaware, saved us three times. The first time, of course, is evacuating Long Island. The second time was when General Sir William Howe, with the aid of his brother Richard, land 4,000 troops at Pell's Point in Westchester County, just above the northern part of the Bronx. And Glover, again, saves the day right there. He has a handful of men, and he's able to hold back 4,000 troops, just enough time for me to get up there in Westchester County on the old Army Road, and of course, finally, meet up with the British at the end of the month, which would have been October then, at the Battle of White Plains.
Well, just an amazing, another individual, for the most part unsung, but I know, General Washington, that you were aware of him, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now you're in Manhattan, which is surrounded by water.
Yes.
And you have no Navy, so what's your next step?
Well, at the time when we finally evacuated Long Island, I go back to my headquarters at No. 1 Broad Street, the Kennedy Mansion, which today happens to be the site of the old Cunard Shipping Line building, which I believe now has been changed over from office space the last 20 years to residential, right across from Battery Park. And by Bowling Green, that's where the Kennedy Mansion was located. There's actually a big plaque there mentioning me spending my time there as headquarters. So basically, I'm fortifying the city. I'm barricading it. I'm trying to protect us. The British haven't left Long Island yet. They're still finishing up their operations to take over Long Island and to basically begin their occupation. I move my headquarters uptown. I move it up to a home that was owned by a gentleman by the name of Colonel Roger Morris, who built the house in 1765. Some people might know the name of that house today. It's a museum house, and it's called the Morris Jamel Manor. So I spent the next month or so at headquarters there. Now, I'm on the high ground, which is a great place to be. You're on a high plateau in the village of Harlem, where I could see all the way down the coast to Manhattan Island. I could take my spyglass and see what's going on in the harbor. I could see if any ships are coming up from the East River. So it's a great vantage point to actually take the high ground. And then finally, of course, a week and a half later, on September 15th, that's when the British formally land, and they take over New York City, and they land at Kips Bay. Now, Kips Bay was a disaster. This is the day before the Battle of Harlem Heights. Here I am on horseback. I am watching my men run in fear, and I'm trying to understand, why are these Pennsylvanians, why are they running away, these militiamen? What's going on here? And they're terrified the second they see those British troops come ashore, going across that wheat field, which was used to be part of the Murray plantation at the time, Murray Hill. And here I am exclaiming, are these the men which I'm expected to defend our liberty with? These are the men we're entrusting everything to? I'm flailing my sword up in the air. I am yelling at the sergeants to get these men back in line. And here's the troops running up the Albany Post Road. That disaster really, really was heart-wrenching. At the end of the month, about two weeks later, I write a letter to my cousin, Lund Washington. Now, keep in mind, most people don't realize when I left my home in May of 1775, that was the last time I stepped on my property until September 1781. So I'm away from home for about 6 years. My cousin, Lund Washington, is managing my plantation of Mount Vernon at the time. Now, I'm writing him in this letter. What happened? I don't understand. This has to be the lowest point in my life. I wish I was never born. Words that people don't realize that I mentioned in a letter to my cousin at this time during this disaster.
Yes, you were facing odds that I think, I don't know if any American until perhaps President Roosevelt, fighting wars in all the worldwide under the same kind of pressure. But I believe that you are even under more pressure because you were personally involved at the front, and you observed these battles personally. And so that was very difficult. So I know, General, you have a busy schedule. So let's move forward now to the Battle of Harlem Heights and then to Fort Washington. And we'll hear and let the people know what happened at that time.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Fab Intro podcast, and we have Anthony LaFaso, co-host. I'm Bill Russo, and you're listening on a call-in, none other than to George Washington.
Okay, so now some most of our soldiers are able to escape up the Albany Post Road and on the east side of the island, what was then called the Eastern Post Road. And I know that we had a outpost at Horn's Hook, where there were some a few of our American Continental soldiers, and they retired in good order under Colonel Sargent's and Colonel Chester, and they were able to get to McCowan's Pass,
yes,
which today is in the Central Park at what would have been 107th Street and 6th Avenue. And so they're able to escape and get into a more secure position. But the following day, there was some more action, wasn't there, General Archington?
Yes, on the 16th. On the 16th, my opinion of the militia, my opinion of the Pennsylvania regiments that ran away changed, because they were able to hold back the British just in time for me to get 6,000 men up the road past Fort Washington, crossing the Kingsbridge into Lower Yonkers, which today is part of the Northern Bronx, and make my way all the way up to the Miles Square Road, basically retreating further into Westchester at this time. I was very happy at the Battle of Harlem Heights, a total different scenario than what happened the day before when the British landed at Kips Bay.
And now, I know that General Greene had recommended to you not to hold Fort Washington, but I unfortunately, I guess we did. We tried our best there,
yeah.
And I know it wasn't very good for us.
No, it wasn't. Basically, we knew Fort Washington was going to fall, and of course, you have the Battle of Harlem Heights, and it's 2 months later, on the 16th of November, when the British make their way into northern Manhattan. You have the Highland troops on the southwest bastion climbing up the hill, attacking Fort Washington. And of course, something else of note that took place at Fort Washington. There's a woman there. She happens to be a wife of an artillerist from Pennsylvania. Her name was Margaret Corbin. Margaret Corbin was what we refer to as our very first Molly Pitcher, who basically manned the cannon and helped those men fight courageously against the Hessian and British troops that stormed that fort.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm glad you said the first Molly Pitcher, because we've had a few of them.
Yes.
there was at least two others that I'm aware of, but I'm sure that you know all of that, General, because you lived it. So that's a dark day, November 16th, 1776. And I know that you didn't come back to New York until 1783. You didn't come back until an evacuation day, November 25th,
absolutely,
1783.
Yes.
And so now it's a dark time for the American Revolution. We've lost thousands of soldiers in the Battle of Long Island, and I understand thousands more at Fort Washington, yeah, that were captured.
Another 2,500 to 3,000 men were captured. A lot of them, unfortunately, made their way to Wallabout Bay, of course, where the infamous HMS Jersey and the two other British prison ships were, where the conditions were extremely harsh.
I know that really hurt you, General. I know that they were in horrible conditions in the prison ships.
Oh, absolutely.
At Wallabout Bay, and I know that had to be hard for you, knowing their distress.
Then the following day, of course, the British renamed Fort Washington Fort Knyphausen, in honor of the Hessian general that commanded the British Crown Forces the day before on the 16th. But yes, it was very heartening to know what was going on in those prison ships. And again, another note, you know, not to leave out the ladies sometimes as well. Elizabeth Bergen. Elizabeth Bergen was a patriot. She was bringing food and medical supplies to the prisoners on the HMS Jersey. And we could credit her with saving 200 men. Don't know how she did it, but over a period of time, she was able to get 200 men to escape from those harsh conditions aboard the HMS Jersey.
Well, now we have a very dark day, and your army, what's left of it, is across in New Jersey. And Howe has dispatched Lord Cornwallis to come and find you. There's no regard for the American army's ability to fight. But you prepare a little surprise for them, don't you?
Absolutely. Now, the whole month of December, you had hit-and-run tactics taking place up and down the Delaware River. You had British and Hessian troops fighting us in skirmishes the whole month of December. A lot of people like to go by the old standard, the old legend that the Hessians were unprepared at that surprise attack that took place on Christmas at the city of Trenton in 1776. But truth be known, those Hessian soldiers were fighting all month. Colonel Rawl, who was in charge of the garrison, kept writing letters to his commanders over New York City. I need more supplies. I need more men. The reply he gets back, you have sufficient amount. Well, obviously, he didn't. His men are run ragged. He lets them stand down for a few hours. They're sleeping. They're sleeping on their arms. Sleeping on their arms, meaning you're a soldier in full kit, probably a cartridge box strapped on your shoulder. You're sitting there in the bunker, maybe possibly sleeping on a floor, musket in your arm at a moment's notice. And yes, the Hessians were caught proverbially with their breeches down. Because then, of course, that surprise attack, there was supposed to be three landings. Because the river was so choked up with ice, we were able to get at least one boat across the Trenton. The rest of the men had to go through that long march. And it's amazing we won that battle because the army was disappearing throughout the whole month of December. Every night, you would have droves and droves of militiamen sneaking out of camp, going back home. They're sitting there thinking, what's the use? We're being defeated left and right by General Howe. We are never going to win this. One of the things that boosted the morale was having read to the men in camp The American Crisis by Thomas Paine. That pamphlet helped us out tremendously. You had those brave men that decided, I'm not going anywhere. I'll try one more time. I'll go on that surprise attack. I'll cross that ice-choked river to fight the Hessians at Trenton. And that was a victory we sorely needed. And
certainly was a victory, Mike. Sure. And I just want to interject here, if you don't mind. You have done an incredible representation, Michael Grillo, ladies and gentlemen, as George Washington. And I have to say, Anthony LoFaso, as...
Thank you for tuning in on those scenes.
I don't know how old Anthony is exactly, but you know he's. I would have to say we have had, ladies and gentlemen, George Washington and Thomas Paine represented by Anthony LoFaso here on the program. I really want to thank the both of you. Let's conclude with what the result of the crossing was and how that ultimately led to where we are and who we are and what the name of this country is.
Well, you know, what we want to say now is that the key that General Washington was looking for was to end 1776 on a positive note. And as the general related earlier, a lot of men after that victory and a lot of people in New Jersey said, you know what? This thing is still alive. We're not done yet. And again, we now go into the following year, 1777, but that's going to be for another podcast, General.
Yeah.
We really thank you so much for taking time from your schedule, and I know that in 1777, we're going to have a lot of excitement, and we're going to encounter the Redcoats again, and I know that you're going to lead the Continental Army in really good style and fashion until we see this thing through. As Thomas Paine said, these are the times that try men's souls.
Absolutely.
So I want to really thank you, General, and I want to thank you for being on our podcast.
It was my pleasure, and thank you, gentlemen, as well.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any comments, any suggestions, you know what to do. So thank you very much, Anthony LoFaso, and our engineer, Ed Paunetto. And this is Bill Russo signing off at the site of what became the United States of America.
Thank you for tuning into the Fab Intro Show.